cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to our Business Masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio as part of our panel is Safia Boulay of New Habits. Welcome, Safia.
Hello, Richard.
Thanks for being with us again. In this first half hour, we're going to be talking business skills in association with USB Ed. Last week, we had Mike Coley, an associate of the RAIN Group for South Africa and Africa, who joined us, and we were talking about using account and relationship management to improve your returns in your business. Great podcast. Go and download that if you haven't listened to that already. Today's theme is on the importance of selecting the correct target market and target segment for your business. Joining us in studio is Mike Gee. Mike is an expert on strategy and marketing, although he's bulked when I said the word expert.
No, I'm not sure about expert.
Mike is also a consultant and facilitator with USB Ed. So, Mike, thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
Well, thanks for the invitation. Appreciate it.
Great to have you with us. So, if I was to look at the whole question of the market or market opportunities, I kind of categorize in the good old, you know, consultant world comes out in kind of the good, let's call it the four-box matrix, into the elements of you can look at penetrating a market, developing a market, perhaps doing some product development in your market, and then potentially you may need to diversify parts of your market. And for me, Mike, if I look at this, I kind of go, well, if I've got my current products and my current markets, I'm actually looking to penetrate the market and actually grow my market penetration.
Yes.
When we talk about market penetration, what sort of things should we be thinking about? What sort of elements should we be considering?
Well, when you're dealing with market penetration, realize that what you're looking for is more out of your existing market. So the first challenge you have is you're going to have to take it away from your competitors because the people who have currently are filling that space are going to react. You come along and say, hey, guys, I want a bit more of your business. And you're moving into a pretty tough environment because nobody says, welcome, take my business. I'm willing to share. Not in today's world when things are so very, very tight. So market penetration is, if anything, the toughest place to be.
Yeah, and I guess if you look at that, it's kind of dog eat dog. Everybody wants some of your lunch.
Well, if you think about that book that was written some years ago in the Blue Ocean Strategy, they talked about the Red Ocean, and the Red Ocean was when the blood flows.
Okay.
And the blood was flowing because it was war. It was outright war.
Yeah. So we're all fighting over the same size of cake or size cake, and if I have my slice, I have your slice, or if you want more of a slice, you're taking from me.
Absolutely.
So, we're looking at the cake and we're slicing it up differently, but the cake's not changing and we all want our slice.
Well, it depends what market you're in.
In
some of the markets we have in the world today, when you've got typical examples are Airbnb and Uber, where they've got no assets, they're breaking into a totally new market. So in the United States, you've got another Uber, if I can put it, that's called Flight. And Flight is saying, well, great, Uber, you've got this, but we're going to go and chase into another bit. And essentially, the market is growing so fast that there is space for everybody. But that's an unusual market. The majority of markets are pretty circumscribed. So the only way you grow in a penetration strategy is to take customers away from somebody else.
Now, let's move to that principle of potentially perhaps new markets and actually doing market development. So, yes, the market might, as in your Uber Flight example, the market's so huge, there's no issue there. But what happens if I need to develop a new market? So I've got my present products and the market's a bit crowded out. How do I go about developing a new market? I mean, what are the things that I should be thinking about?
Okay, can we talk about something that's a little bit new and new thinking? And it's known as the jobs to be done. Now, I'm not sure who quoted this originally. I'm sure we can go looking for the author. But it's a complete switch around. Traditionally, we say, this is what I can produce. Now, where are the new markets? The question now being asked is, what does my customer use my product for? How do I change my product in such a way that I meet their requirements better than anybody else? In fact, how do I completely revise it so that all of a sudden it's something totally new? Mm. At a very simplistic level, this is something that guys can talk about. Gals never get involved in this. Why do you buy an electric drill?
Because you need to drill a hole in the wall.
Okay, so your real need is a hole in the wall.
Yeah.
The tool you have is the electric drill.
Yes.
Now, the pain associated with a traditional electric drill, and by the way, I just make a point. I still use one that was given to me as a birthday gift or let's forget how long ago it is.
Okay.
It still works, and it's got an electric cable, and you've got to have a power point and all the rest of it.
Mm.
But my need is still the same. I need a hole in the wall.
Yeah.
So the pain of using the old system is I've got to have a power source. It's pretty unwieldy. It's difficult to use. I've got used to it. I'm old enough to get used to it. But if I start using the jobs to be done, I say, okay, guys, let's stop thinking about how I can produce a drill. Let me ask what you as a customer want me to produce. What must this drill look like? It must be light. It must be portable. It must be disconnected from a PowerPoint, so it has to be rechargeable. The minute you start thinking this way, and I'm using a very, very simple example with electric drill, the minute you start thinking this way, you start thinking past, how do I compete with other drill manufacturers? And I start asking the question, how do I better satisfy my customers' needs in such a way that I'm just not competing with anybody else, they're actually competing with me.
Mm.
So I'm still making a drill.
Mm.
But I'm making a drill that meets the needs of the customer in a totally new space. So when I start talking to them, I'm addressing their needs rather than mine being a super, super drill.
Yeah.
So is that about the marketing message, or is it about a lot more than the marketing message?
It's a hell of a lot more than the marketing message. It almost starts back at the design phase and when I'm now changing it. Now, clearly, when I'm talking about electric drill, I'm not going to redesign my electric drill.
Other than some minor items.
But when I'm talking about it, I'm not going to say mine has got a faster rotation speed and all of these things. I'm going to talk about how quickly you can drill a hole in the wall.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because your need is for a hole in the wall, not for – well, this is why I said it's a guy thing.
Mm.
Because some guys actually just want the electric drill. But then again, if you're like my wife, she wants the kitchen gadget.
Mm.
Not because she's going to use it. She just wants the kitchen gadget.
Mm.
But that's unusual.
Mm.
Most of the time, we buy things to satisfy a need to do a job.
Mm.
Now, if we start thinking that way, we start designing the product, we start designing the message, we start being able to articulate the value that we're going to deliver, and the whole conversation changes.
Mm.
There's another very good example on TV at the moment. Who's the supplier of nails and TV advert, they show you how to use nails, and the one exercise is you drill the hole and you've got a plug and a nail in one, and you just go tap, 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 and the thing's in the wall, and it's fixed.
Mm.
Now, going back in time, you drilled the hole, you had to get a wall plug, then you had to screw the damn thing in, and it was a major slip. Now, these guys have said, no, no. I, the consumer, just want the piece of wood fixed the wall.
Mm.
So how do I simplify my whole process? They're still producing drills. They're still producing wall plugs.
Mm.
But they're talking about fixed things on the wall.
Yeah.
Mm. And this is how you use it. So it's a completely different mindset.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Mark, that for me is this whole question of, let's call it, so that gets into the space of product development.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We've got the market, the present market. Mm-hmm. I need to put a bracket on the wall. How I do that and the product that I use to address that need, you just, okay, so now we're simplifying the process, we're simplifying the, let's call it the application or the time it takes, et cetera. So you actually develop your product with your client need in mind.
Starting point.
And the starting point. Now, what is the situation when it comes to, I've got an existing product and I want to try and enhance my market and spread my market, or grow my market. How does one do that?
Okay, think in terms of what do people use your product for? You've got a product set.
Okay.
What do people use that product for?
Mm.
Who are those who use that product best? Can you identify them?
Okay.
And having identified them, you will now start talking to those people, not to the market in general. Now, go back to my silly example of the drill. It really is a silly example. Is I can advertise my drill to everybody who moves, including my 15-year-old granddaughter whose interest in electric drills is
zero.
Less than. But because I haven't decided who it is I'm focusing on, all of my promotional processes are just spread thin across all 52.5 million people in South Africa. However, if I start realizing who are the people to whom I'm talking, I can start communicating very specifically with a message that they empathize with, a message that they're actually listening to, rather than my granddaughter who she hears electric drills and eyes glaze over.
She has no interest in that.
She has no interest in that. So suddenly we start asking the question, what is the best vehicle to promote? Is it a do-it-yourself program?
Exactly.
Is it a do-it-yourself magazine or something like that? We start becoming very specific because we know who the target audience is. Suddenly the message is more focused. Immediately behind that is it is heard and so on.
So I'm wondering now, given that you are the expert.
No, please don't use that word.
I'm wondering, obviously this kind of strategy, the jobs to be done approach, really requires that the person must know and understand and almost become the consumer.
Yes.
How many businesses are actually deeply involved in knowing and understanding and becoming the consumer?
I think we misunderstand how many businesses are actually doing that.
Okay.
An awful lot of well-established, old, successful businesses aren't.
Okay.
Because they have been successful despite all the odds in the past. And now suddenly we turn around and there's all of these startups, some really exciting startups around the world, some really exciting young small businesses who are looking how do they start getting into an area that is dominated by the big players.
Okay.
And what they do is they take a totally different view of the market. Why compete with company X when you can find a space where they are not addressing the needs of the customer? So instead of saying we have an average fit across the average customer, we have a specific fit for a specific customer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we only need, if you think about it, what's the number of families in this country at the moment? We've got 52.5 million people, but
Not a clue.
Let's just take a number on the ratio of 10 to 1. Let's assume there's about 5 million families.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And of those 5 million families, roughly 40% are going to be a target audience for a specific product because they're living in some form of home, they're living with a family structure. So now suddenly we've got 2 million people. Now, if I can find a way of talking to 2 million people specifically in terms of their needs, because I understand who they are, understand where they are, my targeting allows me to have a conversation with them rather than 52.5 million people, many of whom are not going to be listening because they're not interested.
So it's the spray and pray versus targeted, focused, and outcome-based engagement.
So to go back to your question, if I'm starting up a business or I've got an existing business and I'm trying to grow my business, what I need to do is to say, who are the people that I am best able to articulate a solution to their needs? So I may be producing exactly the same product as my neighbor next door, physical terms.
Okay.
But in terms of the buyer's mind, because of the words I use, because of the message, because of the way I articulate my service, because of the way I structure my company, because of the way I interact with them, I'm a different product. It's just...
And I guess, I mean, if I was to ask the question and say, you know, what is market segmentation and what is and what are some of the best practices? I mean, what I'm hearing you saying is market segmentation is everything in your business.
Yes.
If you don't get that right, you're just on a wing and a prayer and hoping that somebody's going to take what you're offering. You've got to be able to talk to your audience. It's a little bit like, you know, do you stand on the corner somewhere with a loudhailer screaming, screaming versus going to the specific people that will use your product and say, now let's talk about what your requirements are and let me see what I can do to help you with this.
Yeah. In my world, it sounds like it goes from understanding to connecting.
Oh, once you understand, you can connect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I can have a conversation with somebody with whom I have a connection.
Yeah.
But if there's just a face the other side, physical or otherwise, and I'm just talking at them and I really don't understand language needs, age group, ability to afford things, where they live and so on and so on, I'm just talking at them and saying, please pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have no idea if they're listening.
And I mean, if I think about that, I mean, the reality is, let's call it the dimensions of segmentation. I mean, if I think about it, you know, things like the demographic, the sociographic in terms of preferences, sensitivities to various things, behavioral elements, environmental, you know, who, where, what, and how, the psychographic profile in terms of things like, you know, are they resistant to change or not, can really fundamentally shift your market engagement with this, with a particular segment and how they interact with it. And their behavioral elements. I mean, you know, just what they do and what they will do. I mean, I had an interesting conversation with somebody the other day about who is an adopter of technology and system changes, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we always seem to think we know and understand who will accept a change and who won't. And we profile people based on things like change, and we do it often with a stereotype in mind.
Mm-hmm.
But for example, in this case, it was an IT adoption.
Yes.
And the reality is that the youngest people in the company were actually the most resistant to the change, and the older people in the company were quite happy to do the system change. And you kind of go, well,
yeah, that's a bit counterintuitive.
Counterintuitive, but the reason was that they had worked so much with technology that they were comfortable with the change. And the younger generation, it wasn't about the IT change. It was the fact that we were changing because we were changing.
Yes.
And they didn't like the idea of the change. Yeah. So it wasn't we thought this was a response from an IT perspective. It actually was a change management perspective that they didn't enjoy.
And in your example, I'm wondering if this jobs to be done phenomenon didn't raise its head there, because who was the user that was supposed to benefit from the change?
We have to be careful of buzzwords. Jobs to be done is a nice way of saying this is how you think.
Yeah.
As long as I've been involved in the world of marketing, we've been saying focus on your customer.
Mm.
Understand what your customer says, but we've tended to say, I understand the customer, therefore I am now going to offer you what I think you need.
Yeah.
Mm.
Philosophically, we were saying, understand your customer and then address your customer. We tended to use it as a market research process and say, because I now understand you, I'm going to create what I want, what I think you want.
Yeah.
Jobs to be done is saying, I have to be you.
Yes.
I have to get into your shoes and I have to get into your head. And the reason, personally, and I know of no research that picks up on this, the reason this is becoming easier to understand now is because we have so much information and we have such a capacity to customize what it is that we're offering.
Mm. Now, can I get on to that exact point? And this whole question of what is, and we use the word, target marketing, and everybody says, I'm target marketing. And I go, okay, what exactly are you doing? It kind of sounds like they get out the gun and there's this little red dot running around on their customer base. You know, throwbacks to Mission Impossible, here we come.
Yeah.
What is target marketing and how does that benefit you? Is it a good idea to target market? What are the downfalls potentially if you are, because my worry is always in life, if you target something and you miss, now what?
Yeah. I think there's Boy, you ask an interesting question. Target marketing says I am doing everything to satisfy the needs of the people that I have chosen to serve.
Mm-hmm.
But the needs are going to be in terms of the, let's call it the product level. It's okay. Going to get onto design, other issues. It's going to be relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Increasingly in today's world is relationship. Increasingly the experience they're going to have and that they want to have. Now, if I think in terms of somebody like Starbucks,
mm-hmm.
coffee is coffee is coffee. We may argue to our heart's content about the extent to which some coffees are better than others, and I'm a coffee addict, so I'll join that argument with a great deal of fun. But Starbucks makes absolutely no debate about the fact that they are creating an experience around the coffee that they offer.
Mm.
So they sell coffee, but they sell coffee with an experience. Their targeting, their whole process is who are the people who are prepared to pay for that experience.
Mm.
Now, when I have a conversation about Starbucks with some people, they say, look, I just want the coffee.
Mm.
And if I'm a Starbucks owner, I will sell him the coffee. But it's not really the people I'm targeting. The people I'm targeting are those who come to Starbucks because of the experience, the noise, the milieu, the ambience, mm-hmm. all of that.
Mm.
Because that's what they're creating, and that's their target audience. Will we turn away business? Not a chance.
Mm.
We'll always, somebody walks through the door and says, I want a coffee, and I'll probably look at them and say, you know, it's a strange person asking for coffee here because we sell lattes, we sell this and this and this, just a plain coffee. No, we don't do it. But I'll sell it to you.
Mm.
But somebody who comes in and has joined the family, man, that's my target audience.
Mm. Now, I mean, with so much variety available, and I mean, I just think of that Starbucks example,
yeah.
and the variety, you know, and you talk about the plain coffee and everything else that's available. How do you position your business and create competitive differentiation that kind of says, I mean, and Starbucks, let's be honest, has done that really well. They go,
really well.
We sell that experience and you're not going to get that experience anywhere else.
Yes.
So they've differentiated themselves from their competition. And if you want that experience, you go to Starbucks. Mm. If you want a coffee, you can go to the coffee shop on the corner. Is that sort of approach in terms of creating that competitive differentiation a good thing to do? Does it have any risks to it? Should you be working really hard to create that competitive differentiation, or should it be, you know, Henry Ford style, as long as it's black, it's fine, and let's move on, you know, zero differentiation? I mean, let's be honest.
There's a place for that.
Ford started their lives with no differentiation, and they were unashamedly comfortable with the, we don't differentiate, we mass produce. And that's what got them to where they are.
Well, the starting point of that exercise is design a car that can be sold for $499.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the various margins we've got to make, and what's left over, create it.
Mm.
So they squeezed every cent of cost out of it. But let's go back to your question. Are there risks? Oh, yes. If you get it wrong, yes, there are risks.
Mm.
Is it necessary to do in a hyper-competitive environment that we're in now where everybody is segmenting the market ad nauseum? You've just got to go into a supermarket and look at the breakfast cereals.
Mm.
It's just serried ranks of cornflakes, straight cornflakes, cornflakes with honey and nuts, cornflakes with honey and no nuts. It's unbelievable. And all you're doing is
overwhelming.
It is overwhelming. And if you've been into any of the big U.S. Operations, it's almost kilometers of these things. They're just taking an existing market and they're segmenting it, everybody playing in the same territory looking for minor differences.
Mm.
But using that as an example, one of the things that Kellogg's did very well, they said, what's this about breakfast? You sit down, you have breakfast cereal. In today's environment, how many people are there who have breakfast on the run?
Hmm.
An increasingly large number of people have breakfast on the run.
So they put it
in. So how do I put breakfast cereal so they can have it on the run? I put it in a bar.
Bar. Ah.
Mm-hmm.
So there they
have to change the product.
So they, fundamentally you could argue and say, well, I've got the same type of product. Yes, it's in a different form, but they've opened an entire new market in that example, yeah, because now they're talking to the market that's mobile versus sitting behind a bowl with a bottle of milk, etc.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And
it doesn't look like they've lost the existing market either.
No, because they're two separate. But it took a mindset that said, who are the people who have breakfast? Yeah. Human beings.
Mm.
Does everybody sit down and have breakfast and all the rest? No, hell no. In today's time-stressed environment, a large number of people don't.
Mm.
So I can still produce my old Wheaties and all the rest. I'm sorry, I'm getting brand names mixed up here. But put all of these things, you have it on the plate and have a conversation with the family, and dad understands the pressures everybody else is under. Meantime, the neighbors are in the car and they're off to work.
Mm.
But they're having breakfast while they drive.
Mm. Yeah.
Because they got it in a bar.
Yeah.
Different market.
Totally different market. Yeah, well, quite frankly, I'd rather have breakfast in a bar than a bowl of cereal in my car.
Especially to go through.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Mike, it's been great chatting to you. I think that, you know, the learning for me, particularly in this world, is that if you want to have a competitive advantage as a business, you need to know your market. You need to know who you're talking to. You need to know and understand what their needs are, and you need to address those needs specifically.
Absolutely.
You cannot afford the spray and pray approach. It's not going to work. Doesn't work. It hasn't worked for a long time. And you need to be able to address the market and get to value add point with your customer as quickly as possible.
Yes. Absolutely.
Great. That was Mike Gee, our guest for today. Thank you very much for your time, Mike. We really do appreciate it. Next up, we get a little bit more practical with our SME development conversation. CliffCentral.com.